This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes is down in beautiful Cartersville, Georgia. He's got Falcons night. We got New England in town. Is that who it is, Wes?
That would be correct. Josh Macri's fighting New England Patriot Football Club is here tonight.
They're hot.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, this is off the mark here before we dive into this clutch thing and fourth quarter news. And I only say this because it's under the auspice of the platform of our family of networks here. I don't know if you've had a chance yet on the ESPN app to see the Man in the Arena with Tom Brady that was released on Tuesday, Pack.
I have not.
I watched episode one last night. It's really good. It's really good. And it goes all the way back to like his rookie year when he and – or his second year, I guess, when he and Drew Bledsoe and Bledsoe got hurt and all that. And you remember the turn 2001, the Super Bowl in New Orleans against the Rams. They go back through all of that, and they have Bledsoe on there and Willie McGinnis. It's sensational storytelling. And again, just because it's on our family of networks, I would tell you, it's worth your time to see episode one for sure.
Well, you mentioned Brady, and you got New England and the Falcons tonight, and I think of that particular matchup, I think of comebacks, clutch, and fourth quarter, which might be the perfect segue into our next segment, to be honest with you. And with that said, you are the perfect man to lead off clutch in the fourth quarter.
Thanks. Thank you. Boy, you are a gracious host today.
No disrespect. You brought up Tom Brady. That wasn't even on my radar. Wasn't even on my radar until you brought it up.
No, I understand.
If it makes you feel better, Auburn was up 28-3 on Mississippi State Saturday. Yeah. Lost.
There you go.
Just saying. It happens to others.
Yeah. Yeah. Taylor Davis, who's doing sidelines with us, she was living and dying in the whole ball game. Let's dive into clutch here in the ACC. 59% of ACC games this year have been one possession. One possession. I mean, that just shows you how good the league has been from a standpoint of competitiveness. And that means several of these games are coming down to the fourth quarter. Well, let's take a look at the chart of teams that have posted wins when trailing in the fourth quarter. And some of this may surprise you. Miami's at the top of the list with three. Clemson is two. Bucket load of them with one. Duke, Louisville, Pitt, and Virginia Tech don't have one. Now, pack two thoughts here. One, Miami with three, and we're remembering a lot about Virginia, probably a game they should have won, right? That would have given them four. And Louisville is going to be kicking themselves at the end, potentially, if this didn't go well in these last two.
I've said it for weeks. Two teams, Louisville and Syracuse, will look back at this season, regardless of how it ends, woulda, coulda, and shoulda. You got to be able to close. We say it all the time. I don't care what the sport is. I don't care if you're having a great year, lousy year. At some point in time, when it matters, especially late, you've got to close. That's where you draw the line. And so if you're the Canes at 5-5, hey, you know what? You showed some gumption there, winning some games in the fourth quarter. You've gone through that quarterback change. TVD's throwing it all over the yard. Life is good. Lost a tough one on Saturday, which I know has been buzzing down in South Beach this week. Of course, that Florida State game is always personal. But, there's the good and the bad when it comes to this fourth quarter chart, Wes. One thing to win them. How about the ones that have lost them? That's the tough part.
Well, yeah, you're right about that. When you find the losses here, let's take a look at that one, because losses with the fourth quarter lead are fascinating to watch as well. Now, this is the one you're talking about, because there's Louisville at the bottom with Duke, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech following in behind. Goodness.
Yeah, this list to me is the one that's painful, because this is what, hey, man, we got the lead. Let's go close and get a W and move on to next week. And bam, it slips away. And again, when you look at that bottom part, everybody more than one, Duke, FSU, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Louisville, every one of those teams and their fans are still talking about the ones that got away, right? And that, hey, if you get one, it happens. But when you have multiple, that's when you start scratching your head going, son of a gun, what can we do to get over the hump?
Yeah. Pitt, Boston College, Clemson, and Carolina haven't surrendered a fourth quarter lead. Interesting note about when it comes to Pitt. The Panthers, for a team that, you know, the run game is fine. It's not, you know, what, top 25 in the country. But Pitt's got the closing ability, Pack, but they got to get there. It seems when Pitt gets sideways, they find out in the first half. Western Michigan, right? Miami. It's a first half situation as much as it's something that happened late for Pat Narduzzi's team.
And, you know, you got Kenny Pickett, right? I know we talked to him yesterday. Mm-hmm. In fact, in case you missed it, we'll play that for you later in the program. You know, that's the cool thing about this league. You got unbelievable quarterback play. And if you get down to the stretch in the fourth quarter, if I said to you, who do you want as your guy? You know, you're down a touch, one possession game. Who do you want pulling the trigger? It's hard to answer that question in this league because you've got five, six, seven, maybe eight choices, and you'd be completely comfortable making it that way, right? I mean, this league is special at the quarterback position.
Yeah, this is I like this list on both sides of the ledger, the wins and the losses. Duke had a four-point lead against Charlotte, three-point lead against Georgia Tech. You know, you've seen all these over the course of the fall here. Let's go to the one that's always kind of curious. What about with a fourth-quarter tie, what's your record? I mean, you don't think of this much. It's always leads or deficits, right? Well, there's more in play here than you would think, and I think that's part of the reason we're going to go with this too. Look at the different type games that are tied in the fourth quarter, and Virginia Tech is hitless in two of them, and nobody is, with the exception of Boston College, who's unscathed either way, everybody else has got some blood left in the fourth and tie ball game.
Virginia Tech at 0-2. Wes, you wonder if it was 2-0. Are we having a different tune regarding Justin Fuente? Just asking. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between 5-5 and being 7-3, just one play here. I mean, it just goes to show you the thin line between winning and losing this year in the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, and I think that's a big point too. Mark, we've talked about the margins seemingly since early October of how close games had been. It's just kind of carried through. And historically, we'll have to go back and look and see kind of how it all fits. You know, maybe we do that prior to the championship ball game here week after next. But we're going to get to players eventually down the road as to what this means from a player's perspective in tight games. Well, you brought up Virginia Tech. We've talked about Louisville. I'll go back to Boston College not having a win, a tie in the fourth quarter and producing a win or a loss. I find this to be a really interesting climb year for the league. I still go back to I think the league comes out of all this better overall. It's going to be frustrating for some. There's going to be some change. And we already know of one, potentially more, you never know. But the idea that this league comes out of this better in football, I think, is a real possibility.
I think the Atlantic Coast Conference, more so than any other league in the country, kind of epitomizes what the 21 college football season has been about. Before we started the season, it was the same old narrative, lazy narrative. It's Clemson and nobody else. You got 13 others, 8 on 8.
Right.
There's nobody any good in that league, yada, yada, yada. Guess what? Clemson's having one of those kind of years that, you know what, they're 7-3. There's nothing wrong with that. But when your standard is, hey, let's go to the college football playoff or bust, it's been very unusual. What that did, though, is it opened up the door for everybody. All of a sudden, Clemson becomes vulnerable versus them just obliterating everything in its wake like they have for the six previous years. You've seen Wake Forest emerge. You've seen Kenny Pickett come back and the Panthers be in the hunt. Brennan Armstrong now is a national story. You've seen more games. I just gave you the list of how many games are one-possession games. This league has been incredibly exciting to watch. Not that it's got the national championship team. It doesn't. No disrespect, Wake Forest. It doesn't. But what it does have is a race to the finish to who gets in the conference championship game that's been awesome. I mean, the excitement level at Pittsburgh this weekend, I can only imagine. Hey, you know what? We had a chance to sample what it's like to go to an ACC title game a couple years ago. This is even better because Kenny Pickett's come back. He's a national story. Might be a Heisman finalist. Man, we're throwing it all over the yard. We're a fun team to watch. We got to beat Virginia. The Hoos with Brennan Armstrong. Man, how awesome have they been to watch? You got Wake Forest. Wake stinking Forest, the Swiss. Sitting there top 10 in the country. First time ever. Dave Clawson, brilliant job. They've got to do something. You know what? They haven't done this century. They've got to go win at Clemson. You know, Anderson just said, to take the crown from the king, man, we got to go to the castle and get it. Well, now you got to go get it. Can you do it? I don't know. We're going to find out Saturday. NC State's been a great story this year. An amazing game in Winston-Salem last weekend, 45-42 with what was at stake. There have been more teams with something at stake thinking that they can win an ACC title than I can remember. I mean, Florida State was dominant. Clemson was dominant. It was almost like, hey, those dudes are in another stratosphere. Everybody's playing for second at some point in time. This year has felt totally different. Just like this 21 football season across the country has felt different. Going back to the Dave Clawson quote before the season started, between, you know, six-year players, transfer portal, everything going on, it has been different. So the race to Charlotte, Wes, has never been more exciting for the league, because every weekend these games are tight, they matter, and it gets normally down to a fourth quarter of, hey, who is going to go make a play? Who's going to do it?
Mm-hmm. And now, thanks to the good luck of scheduling, we got compelling games in consecutive weeks, right? Remember, we were tackling October 16th months ago. We thought October 16th was going to be the week. Never turned out that way. Now it's been a back-to-back Saturday exchange, first in the Atlantic last week with NC State and Wake Forest, this week with Pitt and Virginia. And to a degree, one gets the other. Clemson-Wake Forest. If that game goes to the Tigers, we said earlier, then all of a sudden a lot of attention will be on Boston next week to see if Wake Forest can get there. If Pitt doesn't win against Virginia, then all of a sudden we carry over again. Going to be kind of interesting, right?
Well, the reason October 16th was such a big weekend before the season started, because all of us, all of us assumed, well, Clemson's going to win the Atlantic, so let's just put that over here. Right? There's nothing to discuss. It's Clemson, and then, hey, BC and NC State, they'll battle for second. October 16th was a big deal because Miami is at Carolina. Those are the two favorites.
Right.
Pitt and Virginia Tech have a chance. I mean, that was the weekend. That's why October 16th. And now you look back at it and you kind of laugh and go, well, what were we thinking? Goes back to the old adage, the more you read, the more you study, the dumber you get every Saturday. It's why every week's important in the college football season, whether we're talking about the ACC, the Pac-12, or anybody in between. Hey, it's a long journey, man. You go through the highs and the lows, but there is still incredibly important football games to be played this weekend and next weekend. But Wake and Pitt win on Saturday, we know what's happening in Charlotte. And that will be a tremendous game. Yep. That happens to be what it is. I mean, if it's Sam Hartman, Kenny Pickett, goodness gracious. Grab your popcorn. There's going to be some points scored. It's going to be fun.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Yeah, Eric McLean is coming over here in the Wes Durham suite tonight. He will be sitting in for you tomorrow.
No, it's his. Well, it's his suite.
At this rate, it's kind of like Kenny Pickett and Buddy Boeheim in a stretch run here to see who's going to have more student-athlete appearances on Packer and Durham. Right now, Wes Durham or Eric McLean spending the night at the Packer household. It's getting to be a tight race. It may be a name change to the Eric McLean suite. Come close.
I think I was only there twice.
Like I said, it's getting close. Keeping score. Might have to change the nameplate.
Mac came by one time to change luggage a couple weeks ago. That doesn't count, right? I'm going to pull Kenny Pickett on this one.
That's right.
Okay.
That does not count.
All right.
No, doesn't count.
Well, speaking of Kenny Pickett, he has had a phenomenal year in Pittsburgh, and he's now playing on the biggest stage in the ACC. A win, and the Panthers are in Charlotte for the Subway ACC Championship game 2 weeks from Saturday, against the winner of the Atlantic Division, and certainly Wake's in the driver's seat there going to Clemson. But we asked Kenny about Saturday. It's the kind of ball game everybody's been talking about. Does this week feel different knowing it's the Cavaliers and a chance to Charlotte?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a championship at stake, and I think the message that we've had all season, every ACC game that we've had, you know, we've been preaching that it's a championship game. And we've been preparing that way. So I'm hoping the guys kind of took that message to heart. And, you know, now we find ourselves in a championship game Saturday. So, you know, I hope we, you know, all prepare the same.
I just want to congratulate you on more Packer and Durham appearances than any other student athlete in the history of the ACC. You continue to build upon the lead. That's the first thing I want to tell you, Kenny. So congratulations on that feat.
Thank you. I think that's the biggest accomplishment this season so far.
Forget the Heisman. I just want the Packer and Durham gear.
That's
we
it,
know
yeah.
how you roll.
We know how
it is. You know, I also want to congratulate you on coming back. I know we haven't had a chance to talk during the season from that perspective, but you made a really, really bright business decision. And, you know, just watching you play every week, it just looks like you're having a blast playing the game. Is that true?
Yeah, I really am. It's been an unbelievable ride so far this season, and you know, I couldn't imagine it going any better. And, you know, I'm excited to go finish it strong.
Okay, so what's been the surprise for you this year? In all the things that have happened, what's been fun to see happen either for you or for this football team, Kenny?
That's a good question. I don't think anything's surprising. I think this is something that we've all. And, you know, I had envisioned for this team. I'm just happy seeing, you know, a lot of guys touching the ball and a lot of guys getting in the end zone. You could just see the joy on, you know, all the guys on the offensive side. And then our defense had a great game against UNC, and they really carried us that game. And it was a complete team effort. So it's been a blast seeing, you know, this team rally around each other and go win games.
All right, let's get back to all the guys touching the ball. Roddy and I are doing the ball game in Atlanta. We look down, like 11 guys have touched it in the first half. We do the ball game at Duke a couple of weeks ago. Look down at halftime, like 9 guys have touched the ball in the first half. Are you and Whip, like, sitting in there every week going, okay, let's see how many different cats can touch it, you know, in the first half? Or are you exploring different guys? Do you think, like, okay, we don't want to become, you know, predictable? Is that how all that happens, I guess?
I would say we don't draw it up that way. At least I haven't talked to Coach Whip about that, saying, oh, we need to get, you know, so-and-so the ball. We need to get him the ball. It kind of just, you know, we're using the entire offense, and every guy has the option to get the ball. So if you watch this year versus previous years, every guy is running to win. Every guy thinks that he has a chance of getting the ball that play. And I think that's kind of the difference you see in the offense this year, and guys are running downfield, and, you know, we're running by people, and you know, we're messing up zones with how fast guys are getting through. So, it just makes your, you know, offense a lot more successful.
I want to know, who was the guy after you guys scored in overtime that went over and picked up the phone and talked to the Lord and said, it's time for the monsoon? Who's got that kind of power on your sideline?
I'm not sure. When we find out, I got to make sure I thank him too, because the last play we had, again, you know, I threw the touchdown to Lucas. It was coming down pretty hard. I was like, you know, they're going to have a tough time with this, and it got worse. So I'm definitely glad that we got the ball first.
You know, you wear the two gloves. Does that change with weather conditions, or have you just gotten used to the fact that, hey, you know what, that's what I do?
No, it's like the receiver gloves, when they get wet, they're not great. And there's like a kind of a weather glove that I have that works a lot better with a wet ball in the rain. So I just switched to that in overtime, and it works pretty well.
All right, the two gloves thing, Roddy and I've joked about it on the air. Kenny, two gloves. I don't know where the two came from. But it's been great. I know there are a few guys in the NFL that do it. What brought the two gloves into play, Kenny?
That was really, I mean, it was 2 years ago against UNC on a Thursday night, actually. It was my first time doing it as a junior. I did it one time as a sophomore against Virginia Tech. After that game, you know, Coach Whip asked if, you know, how I felt with it, and I told him I like it. He goes, all right, we'll try it again this week. You know, it continued to work for me, and you know, we just let it ride out.
Last home game. You know, it always comes to an end at some point in time before there's a new journey. Have you given that some thought? I mean, I know you're concentrating on Virginia, trying to punch the ticket and get to Charlotte. But, man, you've had such a great ride. But this is the last time you're walking through that tunnel at Heinz.
Yeah, I thought about it. It's going to be a special day. You know, I'll see my family, see my friends, and you know, hopefully we go out there and get the job done. But, you know, I'm appreciative and grateful for all the memories I've made at Heinz Field. And, you know, we got one more to go.
Oh, well, I want to ask you about the 21 quarterback club in the ACC, because we touched on this in July when a lot of you guys were here in Charlotte for the kickoff. And I saw you and Sam Howell, even though he got hit pretty good at the end of the ball game the other night, I saw you and Sam Howell exchange a couple of words after the game the other night. It's been a hell of a year for quarterbacks, Kenny. I mean, it's been a spectacular year. Maybe one of the best this league's ever seen. What's it meant to be part of it, and how much have you guys been able to kind of stay in touch a little bit as the season wears on?
No, it means a lot. I'm proud to be a part of it. You know, like you said, I was able to talk to Sam after the game. I told him I don't think this is the last we'll see of each other. But, you know, I think, like you said, it's a heck of a year for quarterbacks, and, you know, it's a great feeling to be a part of something special.
You know, you see another quarterback, hopefully, for all of our sakes, from fans, with Brennan Armstrong. I know as the season goes on, you prepare for the team you're playing, but do you ever have a little sneak peek about what everybody else is doing? I mean, Hartman's been unbelievable at Wake. You know about your man Sam Howell. You guys had the exchange. Armstrong's been crazy. Malik Cunningham's doing his thing. You saw TVD the other day when Miami rolled up there and was spinning dimes all over the place. I mean, do you take a sneak peek of just the numbers, big picture in the ACC, or is that just irrelevant?
Really not so much numbers. Kind of if there's a Friday night game, or if I'm at 12 on Saturday and there's a night game I can catch, I definitely tune in and I watch those guys and see what's going on around the ACC. Just making sure that, you know, I'm aware with the kind of talented teams we have in the conference.
All right. Well, the finality is here, my man. We appreciate your visit as always. Now, Packy is officially number one.
On the leaderboard as we speak, number one, Kenny Pickett. And he's not done. Not done, because I'm telling you, you punch that ticket, you know what? We're down here in Charlotte. Just saying. Just saying.
In person, too. I think that'll bump me up another level.
Oh!
Hey, if that's not incentive, there's no such thing. No such thing. We wish you the best, man.
Take care, Kenny. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Easy guy to root for, man.
Are we efforting, if Pittsburgh makes it, that 2 weeks from tomorrow, KPH shows up in the basement?
Well, wait a minute. I got to figure he's got some things. And again, we're assuming they get there. Let's not fast
right,
forward.
That's
the clock.
What I said.
Let's not fast forward.
I said
forward
if.
Yeah, right. Biggest word in sports.
Sports.
If. Right. I mean, yeah. Virginia's sitting there going, hey, what are you guys talking about? We win this game. We beat those boys from Blacksburg, boys. You'll see us down here in Charlotte. So you got to get there
well,
first.
And I would say this. If the Cavaliers make it, we'd be more than happy to welcome the head coach of the Cavaliers over for a visit. He's friend of the show, right?
I tell you what, if the Cavaliers make it, I will squeeze, and let me emphasize, squeeze into that number 5 Packer UVA jersey that they sent last week for the celebratory 500
Wait,
show.
Hold on. That's on you. I am not trying to get it in mine.
Well, I don't know.
I am not.
It's a double zero. You got that. You can squeeze in that double zero. Be perfect. Walking around like the Bobbsey twins. Be fantastic. But
yeah, sure we would. Yeah, we'd be bad.
But assuming that Pitt takes care of business, they're favored. They're expected to win the game, and if so, they'll be here in Charlotte. We look forward to seeing Kenny Pickett, man. He's an easy guy to root for. He's been great with us on the show, and I'm just thrilled that he made a decision to come back and enjoy college life. And like I said, when you watch him play, he just looks like he's like a kid in a candy store, man. He's just out there slinging it, having fun with his boys, and they're winning games. He can't be any better than that. Can't get better than that.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, it's a Thursday. Lots of guests coming your way. Matter of fact, we're going to head down to Tiger Town and possibility, Wes, we might be speaking to the only person that isn't injured, and that's Grace Rayner from The Athletic, who now joins us.
Wrong. Wrong.
Grace, first of all, let's get an injury report from you before we get into the injured Tigers. Are you physically okay? Everything good on your end?
Physically, Wes, I got my stitches out. So, yes, we are good. The avocado situation has been taken care of. So, all yes, right. We are good to go.
Last week, she looked like she got in a fight in like the Spanish-American War with a battalion of swordsmen. It was not good. Didn't look good at all. She showed up with a Digit undercover pack. Not good. I mean, when the beat writer for the multimedia platform known as The Athletic is also injured, what is that telling you?
I'm just glad we're like ready to go. And typing last week was hard, Wes. Like, now that I can finally type again normally, I do have a pretty gnarly scar, I will say. So I will always remember this incident.
Grace, I mentioned to you during the break, since I was at school at Clemson 100 years ago, I don't remember any season even remotely close to what Clemson has gone through from an injury standpoint. And it's not an excuse. You know, you have some years where, man, you kind of go through the season for the most part with a couple of bumps and bruises and you're pretty good. And the Tigers, for the most part, have been that team. But this year, man, it has been the worst of storms. I mean, you name it. And it just seems like everybody's the walking wounded. And, of course, the news yesterday regarding Justin Ross, who's played his last game for the Tigers. What a career. And he's going to go on to have surgery and go to the NFL. But, man, the Tigers are really, really banged up.
They are. You know, last night, Dabo Sweeney was talking about between injured players and transferred players, Clemson could field literally an entire offense. If you put Will Taylor as your quarterback, then from there, you've got two running back transfers. You've got five guys along the offensive line that are injured or transferred. Braden Galloway at tight end is out. I mean, it's just Justin Ross is out and God is out. Ladson's out. I mean, it's literally they're getting to the point now where between offense and defense, it's got to be 20, if not more, 20 guys who are either unavailable or who have transferred.
All right. So, Grace, we've been talking about 35 all week long. That's the number of points Wake has scored in every game. Clemson scored more than 40 last week for the second time in beating UConn. The only other time they've cracked 40 was against South Carolina State. Is that too simplistic to say Clemson either has to find a way to stop Wake Forest or they got to find a way to score? Or is there more to it than that for you on Saturday?
I don't think it's too simplistic at all. I think that's exactly it. I mean, Brent Venables has kind of had Wake Forest's number these past several years. And Clemson's defense has played well. And so I don't really have any reason to believe that the defense isn't going to show up and do its part. But let's say the defense holds Wake Forest to half their scoring output. I mean, that's still 20, 22 points. And like you said, Clemson is averaging, I think, 24 a game. And that's with blowout wins over UConn and South Carolina State. So I think the defense will be ready to do its part, and I don't want to completely oversimplify it, but to me, it really does come down to can Clemson score?
Grace, I'm not into the lines or Vegas or gambling, but I am fascinated how Clemson is favored in this game. Unranked, banged up. I know they're at home, and they've got one of the great home field advantages on the planet, 33 straight, and Wake hasn't won near this century. But Wake's a top 10 team, and they're just seemingly having one of those special kind of years. Explain to me, if you can, how Clemson is favored according to the smart folks in Vegas. How's that happen?
I also don't know. I saw that, and I think when I looked yesterday, they were at 4.5. I mean, I think it has to be because this is a home game for Clemson, but I don't know. Every single week, I feel like, not even with just Clemson, just across the board, I look at Vegas, I'm like, man, they just must know something that I don't, because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. I really thought that Wake would come favored into this game.
You know what Woody used to say, don't you, kids? That's the reason those guys live in big houses and drive big cars. That's the reason.
Well, but you know, common sense, I mean, it really, if you're sitting there as a neutral bystander on the couch and you love college football, and you've watched Wake Forest play through 11 weeks, you've watched Clemson play through 11 weeks, and you say, hey, listen, your life depends on it. Who do you think wins that game? I mean, you got to be honest and say, well, what's a stupid question, isn't it? I mean, Wake has been so good, so unbelievably effective offensively, and Clemson just keeps looking for answers and healthy bodies on the offensive side. And I know that defense is still salty and really good, and that'll be the best unit Wake's played against on the road in what should be a pretty hostile environment. I get all that, but I just, you know, there's a kind of a disconnect. And it's why I don't gamble. I don't mess with it, because, you know, there are smart people out there. They must see something. But I think it's going to take an amazing effort by Clemson to win a game. That's how I feel about this thing Saturday.
I agree with you, Pac. I mean, I just like it's going to be an emotional day, too. They've got a really long home winning game streak on the line. It's senior day, which for a lot of these guys, they're 6 years. So, you know, they've played a gazillion games in this stadium. But, yeah, I mean, I just think that they have to be – I think that we keep waiting for Clemson to break through, and I don't know if we will ever see it at that point. I think every week that they're winning, they've done – just enough. And I think that I'm kind of past the point of like, are they going to have their breakthrough, or can they just, when the game is over, can they have more points next to their name than the other team?
All right. So let's go to a detail piece then, because defensively and watching them, you can pick out your favorites, and we know Brzee's been hurt and things of that nature. Andrew Booth did not play last week. I want to go to the details of this game, because I don't know whether it's A.T. Perry. I don't know if it's a Ja'Cory Roberson situation, even Taylor Morin, who's had a fantastic year for Wake Forest at wide receiver in a very supplemental, almost secondary role to what Perry and Roberson have done. Seems to me this is a huge test for Mario Goodrich, Andrew Booth, even Sheridan Jones, who made a play last week against UConn. Where do those matchups fall in your mind, Grace, from Clemson's perspective?
Yeah, I do think that this is going to be a huge game for Clemson's secondary. And Dabo Swinney said this week multiple times, this is the best group of receivers that Clemson will have seen all year, the most complete group of receivers they've seen all year. And so I think that it's going to be crucial that, A, these cornerbacks are show up ready to play. Goodrich, I think, has had a really good year, and I think that he hasn't gotten a ton of credit just because Booth is kind of the flashy name and everyone remembers his one-handed interception last year, and he's kind of been that number one corner. But I think that Goodrich has had a really incredible year. And then I think that Clemson's defensive line, like you said, they're without Brzee. They've been without some of these pieces, but they're going to have to get some pressure up front to kind of make life a little more difficult for this Wake offense, because once this Wake offense gets into a rhythm, as we've seen, I mean, they're number two in the country for a reason for scoring offense.
Grace, I think the flip side is the fact that I said this to Eric McClain yesterday, I'm not a coach, but hey, if I sit there and look at Clemson this year and go, all right, I'm going to take the run away from you. I'm just going to load the box and dare your quarterback to throw it to whatever wide receiver you still have left, and I'm going to take my chances, and I'm just going to play man coverage. I'm loading the box. You can't run on us. On your mark, get set, go, because I think we're going to score. How does that happen for Clemson? I mean, DJ gives you moments where you go, wow, there's the guy we saw last year. Then it gives you moments where, hey, it's behind, it's over his head, guys are dropping passes. I mean, I don't know how that works if you're Clemson, based on what I've seen through 11 weeks of the season, if Wake Forest just loads a box and dares you to throw against them.
Yeah, I mean, they've had major issues in the passing game. DJ has struggled with accuracy. He's overthrown a lot of receivers. And then Dabo's been very clear about the receivers haven't played well around him. You know, when he is struggling and he makes a good throw and they drop it, then that gets him out of rhythm. And it's just, they just have never been able to consistently, and Tony Elliott has spoken about this too, the offensive coordinator, all 11 guys have not been able to consistently get on the same page. And I think that's what we're seeing every single week is, it's very rare that all 11 guys get on the same page. When they do, I really do think it's fireworks. I mean, DJ's got a big arm, and when he's accurate and he's got these receivers coming down with these balls, Clemson has all the pieces that it needs. But it does kind of feel like to me, also not a coach, that if you can stop Shipley and if you can stop Pace and kind of make him beat you through the air, you're gonna have a chance.
Well, and there's the twist to the backside of this whole deal. We can spend all day talking about Wake's offense and Clemson's defense, but last week, Wake's defense stopped NC State's run game. Wolfpack's had a hard time running it. Again, one of the great mysteries of ACC football behind everything Louisville does, as Pack likes to say. But if Shipley and Pace are healthy and Clemson can keep it away from Wake Forest, I'll use the same logic I used last week with NC State. Is there some semblance of confidence about what Clemson can do in a run game in order to shorten the game, Grace, against the Deacons, rather?
Yeah, I mean, Shipley and Pace, I think together have been a really good duo. And Shipley's one of those guys that I think we're going to look up in a couple of years. And I'm not saying he's going to be Travis Etienne, but he has that type of explosiveness to where when he gets the ball, like you know that you could be in trouble defensively. But I think that was Clemson's biggest problem against NC State is they could not stay on the field. Their offense couldn't. Their defense was on the field for, I think, almost 40 minutes. I think it was 38 minutes. And so if this offense can't stay on the field, then I don't see how Clemson can keep up if this becomes a track meet, if they can't stay on.
And that's kind of how I feel too, Grace. I mean, I just, based on what I've seen in 11 weeks, I'm hard pressed to think that Clemson can win a shootout game. If it's a first to 40, they're not really equipped this year to be able to handle that. Now, listen, I say this all the time. The more you read, the more you study, the dumber you get on Saturdays when you watch all these games. But Wake has been so consistent. I mean, they've done it to everybody. Doesn't matter what you throw on them. Sam Hartman, great wide receivers, that old mesh play they do that drives people crazy. They've scored 35 or more on every single buddy. And now, listen, Clemson's D is the best that they're going to see. It'd be the toughest environment that they've played in. I get all that. And the fans will be a factor from that perspective. You know, it's a noon kick. But, man, it's one of those games I just think that you look at it and you go, boy, so many things have to fall in place for Clemson to win the game. And why are they favored by 4.5? There's like a disconnect with me studying this game for this week.
Yeah. I mean, I also think, too, that when you look at just big picture implications, like for Wake, it is so much more simple than it is for Clemson. Wake wins, they go to the ACC championship. Clemson has to win. They need Wake to lose again next week, and they need NC State to lose. God, all this math is making my head hurt.
No, that's
and
right.
They need NC State to lose one of two, right? I mean, there's just a lot of – I don't know if that plays a factor into how free Wake comes into this game playing loosely, but I think you have to at least consider it that Clemson, Dabo said himself, are kind of a bunch of wounded dogs is the term he used. Like, they are playing for their lives right now, whereas Wake – they really are in control of the division.
All right. This is going to go backpack to my question that I asked you earlier. I'm going to pose this to Grace. Is this kind of the Super Bowl for Clemson? Pack says no, because Clemson's got this whole standard and all the success. I agree with that too. But this particular team, is this a chance to – and they've only lost three games. And, by the way, the three losses are to teams who potentially could win 10 or more. So it's not like they've lost a, you know, canned ham on the shelf in the budget aisle. I mean, they've lost to really good football teams. But for some reason, this feels like Clemson's chance to rewrite what everybody was saying about them really since week one, Grace.
I agree with you, Wes, for sure. I mean, maybe that this season is not the traditional Clemson team that we've seen, and they're not playing up to the traditional standard that we've seen. But this week, final home game of the year, you lose, you're not going to the conference championship. You win, you keep hanging on by a thread. You've got these guys on senior day. You've got this 33-game home winning streak. I think that, and I think that if Clemson wins this game, I think you can at least have a conversation about them being in the top 25 again. I mean, they'd be, what, 8-3 at that point? So I think so. I mean, I really do. I just think it's not one of those – usually by now Clemson has this wrapped up, and it's just kind of a fast forward to the ACC championship. And Clawson joked over the summer that, you know, Wake has not really super played Clemson very competitively, and he was saying that he hopes this game there's something on the line for Wake Forest, and there's going to be. But yeah, I mean, I think this is as big of a game as it gets for Clemson this year. Top 10 team at home, your last home game of the season.
All right. Take care of the digit. We look forward to having you back as available in full speed. It's not
thank
often you get the
thank
beat writer
you.
On the injury report too, right, Pack? I mean, the beat writer on the injury report. With all the other people on the injury report.
Been one of those years in Tigertown, man. Everybody's walking around wounded. It's just one of those deals.
How do they list that? Would that be probable avocado? Is that the way that works, Pac? You think we list it as probable avocado, right? Not lower leg, not upper body, avocado, right? Let's go with that.
That sounds a lot better than what I had to tell the doctor. It was so embarrassing. I wish I had a better story.
Thank you, Grace.
I'd go with it.
Take care.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
All right.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. Always fun talking to Grace Rayner. Glad she's feeling better. All right, it's time to go. Time to go to Bristol.
Got to be careful. Got to be careful with the avocado, my man.
I don't eat them. If it's green, I'm not eating it. I don't eat an avocado.
I got you. Okay.
I'll give that to Mrs.
All right.
She eats healthy. I'm not eating that avocado.
All right.
Nope. I don't like the texture.
All right.
It's kind of nasty.
Let's get the voice of victory in here before we get you sick. All right. Talking about green food. There he is, ladies and gentlemen. Looking to rebound, are you, after last week? Looking to rebound.
Yeah, but you're not talking about the Falcons-Patriots game, though, I assume. There's really nothing to rebound from there. There is for the team in black and red, but... anyway.
Been kind of a two-man collapse on the West today, hadn't it? From the Patriots-Falcons perspective.
Hold on a second. First of all, I don't care who wins the game. Doesn't matter to me. All right. So second of all, you brought up Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Like something we got to watch. And the first thing I think about with Tom Brady.
It's really good.
No, I get that. But I knew that we're going into clutch play. And then you bring up Tom Brady. And I think Brady... Clutch, what's the first thing that pops in my head? 28-3. That's the first thing that pops in my head. So, I mean,
okay.
I would never have brought it up if you don't bring up Tom Brady. Just saying.
I got you. Okay.
For the record.
All right. Well done.
Now, voice of victory, it's personal. He's got a little
different
skin in
the game. It is personal.
Different animal there.
But let's
Well, and he's feeling it because Mac Jones is vibing right now, too. Mac Jones is vibing. Patriots are winning. You know,
yeah.
The whole deal.
True.
So there we go.
But this is an over-under, and we will actually start this segment by talking about our Thursday night football game, Duke and Louisville. As we documented earlier, Mateo Durant has only rushed for one touchdown in his last six games after finding the end zone eight times in his first four. Louisville, meanwhile, has only allowed one rushing score in their last three. So over-under a half of a rushing touchdown from Mateo Durant versus Louisville tonight.
Over.
Yeah, he'll get on the ground tonight. He's in tonight.
Yeah, I think 21 sees the end zone, maybe more than once. But I think Louisville's going to see the end zone a lot. That's what I think.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that, and I think that tonight, if Holmberg cannot go, I think Riley Leonard, Jordan Moore, whatever the combination is, they're going to need to ride Mateo Durant a lot.
Yeah,
I think tonight is one of those 30-35 carry games for Mateo Durant.
I'd give it to him that way anyhow. He's that kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yep. Voice of victory. What else we got?
Jahmyr Gibbs, somewhat quietly, is ranked second nationally with over 1,600 all-purpose yards this season. 200-plus in all-purpose yards each of the last three games. So, over-under, 150 all-purpose yards for Gibbs this weekend against Notre Dame.
I'm going under.
Under.
Yep.
I'm going under the next 2 weeks.
Definitely the next 2 weeks. Yeah, Notre Dame's getting better week in, week out. I know Virginia didn't have number five last week, but, man, they kind of stuffed the Hoos. I mean, Virginia had a three spot.
Right.
And Georgia Tech going on the road, I don't see it. Now, I hope he does. Rooting for him. But I'm with you, Wes. I think that's an under.
Yeah. Under not only against Notre Dame, I think it's an under against Georgia, too. Because Georgia knows, any of these next two teams know, Josh, to your point about Gibbs and the big number, this is the most explosive player Georgia Tech has, okay? He's at the top of the scouting report every week for opposing defenses. Not the quarterback, not a wide receiver, this guy. When one is on the field, he's the most dominant explosive player they've got. And I've been that way since week one, and he has delivered the goods in what I think is a year he could have had. I think he could have had 2,000 yards of all-purpose yardage. But it hadn't worked out that way for Jahmyr Gibbs.
Terrific player, though. That's for sure.
Oh, my God. Yep.
All right, guys. Last one here. We documented earlier the phenomenal number of one-score games that have taken place this football season. over under 4.5 of them this week involving ACC teams.
Under. Under.
You like Carolina Wofford in this mix too, by the way?
Yeah, involving ACC teams.
Yeah, that's definitely not a one-score game.
Include it.
Pack, you say under?
I'm going under.
Under?
Yeah, I'm going to say it third time, under.
Okay.
I don't think tonight is a one-score game. I don't think Wofford, North Carolina is a one-score game. I don't think Georgia Tech, Notre Dame is a one-score game. I don't think Syracuse, NC State's a one-score game. I don't think your game is a one-score game. Yeah, I'm going under.
Wow. Man. Come on now. Let's have a little excitement on this weekend.
Well, I didn't say you're not going to have excitement. I just don't think you're going to have a plethora of one-score games.
Okay. I'm going to go under as well. I think you're right. I think it's a bigger number than two. I think we're looking at 3, 4. I think it's 4. But I don't think it's over 4.5. 4.5 is a really good line to set, by the way, Josh. That's why you're the voice of victory right there.
So did we agree on every question? Am I correct on that?
I think we did.
Man,
I think we did.
That's unusual.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.